Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name's Josh. I'm an entrepreneur traveling around, having conversations with other entrepreneurs, business leaders, investors, people who support the entrepreneurial community here in Orlando. Today, I'm having a conversation with Paul Ellis, who's the CEO of Foundry Commercial. Paul serves as the CEO of Foundry Commercial with over 300 employees, 12 offices, and has completed over $1 billion in investments and development joint ventures. Paul, welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I read your bio, it actually increased from 300 employees to now 320.
Yeah. It's been a lot of growth over the. We're in our 12th year.
Wow.
So it's been a lot, but it's been a lot of employee growth over that season. Started with 12. Yeah.
Wow. So why don't you give us an idea of who is Paul? So I read a little bit of your bio, but why don't you kind of let us behind the scene of who is Paul?
Well, it depends on who you ask, right?
Yeah.
I was born and raised in Orlando, was born in Winter Park, grew up in Seminole County, and then went away to the University of Florida and came back, not necessarily. Out of some grand plan, just came back, you know, love the city, love being here, love growing up here, and got married about a year and a half after college, and started a real estate career. And I was fortunate that I was really starting my real estate career after the last big recession in the late 80s, early 90s. And so what's happened for me is that while I started in the appraising world and then got into commercial real estate, the recession kind of healed and Orlando, you know, during that time had an enormous growth spurt. And so I always had new opportunities within the companies that I was working with and I didn't have to move. A lot of my peer group had to move around or move to another city or do something else and what have you. And I just was at a... ended up, you know, being at Trammell Crow Company, and Trammell Crow Company was coming out of the recession and grew. And so I always had a new thing to go do and to challenge myself without having to change locations. So subsequently, I've never left.
Nice. What did you study in school?
I studied real estate. It was real estate and urban analysis. And as I've counseled my kids, that was not some grand design, though. I knew I was going to be a business major. And it seemed like everybody else was getting a finance degree and I really wanted to do something different. My dad was in real estate, that kind of was interesting to me. So it was really more so I just didn't want to do what everybody else was doing. And so Florida had a great kind of real estate program. It was one of the early ones in the undergraduate world. And so, I ended up doing that and that equipped me to come out of college and really start right in real estate appraising. I mean, what they did, that was really what that program was geared toward back then. Today it's a much different program, but back then it was geared towards real estate appraising. So when I came out of school, I was able to launch pretty quickly, a lot faster than my peer group, because I had a lot of the training on the appraisal side. And so did that for about 2.5 years, did that for about 2.5, 3 years. Real estate appraisal industry changed pretty dramatically. I loved the training it got me, but at that point I knew I really loved commercial real estate, but I really didn't like appraising. And so ended up getting an opportunity with Trammell Crow Company, which is back then and still is kind of a legendary name in our space, in the commercial real estate space.
Sure. So what didn't you like about appraising? So you went to school and you learned how to evaluate a piece of property. Mm-hmm. You could go look at a residential or commercial and you could say, mm-hmm. This is what it worth based on, you know, what the market's doing.
Right.
What, after 2-3 years, you said you wanted to get into commercial. What didn't you like about what you were doing in appraising?
Without too long of an answer, there were a couple things. One, the industry changed very dramatically during my my tenure in it. The state certification became a thing. And in the appraisal world, all of the appraisers were looking at state certification as it was going to be a great thing. That we would be able to charge fees like attorneys and lawyers, right? I mean, attorneys, lawyers, and accountants. We'd be able to charge more in an hourly kind of rate, and really the better you are, the more you'd be able to charge. That was the hope that would happen. And back then, MAI was the standard, and I was at a point where I needed to go ahead and finish my MAI. But what happened was is that with state certification, the exact opposite happened. It used to be the banks and the lenders would require the MAI certification, and when state certification came in, now that's all you had to have in order to be qualified to do an appraisal. And so the fees in that space dropped, you know, the bottom dropped out. And it became more about became more about fee generation than the quality of the product. And I really was kind of more drawn toward the more complicated assets to try to figure it out and what have you. And you ended up having to work hard and be a little bit more creative and trying to figure out what a thing was worth. And that wasn't what the industry was about, right? The industry became about how many reports can you produce.
Sure. Right. It became a numbers game
a little bit. You know, the refinance world back at that time was enormous because everybody was coming out of the crash, and so they were refinancing properties, the interest rates dropped, and it really just was how many reports could you do. Which on the one hand is great, right? Because if you're gonna work hard, you know, you have kind of an unlimited ceiling. But it really wasn't what I wanted. I really loved, you know, I really had grown to love commercial real estate. And knew that that was the industry I wanted to be in, but I also knew that appraisal was, I needed to go ahead and move on.
So how do you, for those listening in there who might be in an industry, a specific niche or something, and they want to start making a pivot, kind of, you started making a pivot from appraising to commercial. Mm-hmm. What did you do and what advice could you give for people who are looking to pivot into something new?
You know, at that time I was still, you know, relatively early in my career. Yeah. I think the best thing that I did was network, you know, and really just start talking to a lot of people, talking to a lot of relationships, beginning to kind of get the word out there that, hey, I'm looking to make a move. And actually, a fraternity brother of mine from college, you know, as I was having lunch and what have you, and said, hey, you know, I'm probably going to make a move here. He was the one that said, hey, Trammell Crowe's starting. I know some of the folks over there. They're probably looking for an analyst, and you ought to call them. So it was, again, it was more, it wasn't some grand design. It was beginning to really just get the word out there. And then, at the end of the day, it became about persistence. Crowe was kind of rebuilding itself, rebuilding the company, and they weren't totally sure what they wanted. They had this analyst program, and Crowe had not hired people from the real estate industry. They had hired people from other industries or right out of grad school. And so it took me about 4.5 months of calling them and stalking them, right? I would stalk them. I would figure out what events they were going to, the people that were hiring. I would just stay on them. And quite frankly, I probably made a bunch of mistakes during the interviews and the process, that what have you. But ultimately, I think the people who hired me, who have, you know, ended up being my mentor, my friends, they said they hired me just to get me to stop calling them.
Right? Will you please stop calling us? Fine,
really
was. It was a job.
It really was. it really was, and it was professional. You know, it was professionally persistent, but it was, you know, it was evident that every, you know, I was going to call them every day, or I was going to bump into them every day, and it got. I mean, I think in some sense it got so awkward that they finally just had to call the play.
Yeah. Awesome. So with this idea of professionally persistent,
yeah,
how has that helped you build Foundry and grow it to what it is today?
So I think you know, in just that context, in terms of the persistence standpoint, you know, our industry on the real estate side, particularly on the production side, and I would say argue it's probably the same in residential or what you do, and that is, it's not complicated, right? It's not uber complicated. Certainly the finance, and as you get into bigger assets and development business and what have you, is complicated. But on the production side, if I make 75 cold calls and you make 50, I'm probably going to beat you. Now, I can do things to work on my close ratio, and I can do things to better present myself or to better articulate the value that I'm bringing to the table. But still, if I make 75 and you make 50, I'm probably going to win. And that is, you know, pretty core to what we do on the real estate side. And that's in the production side, that's on the development side, that's, you know, on the tenant side as we manage these buildings, right? You know, we really want, you know, our property managers and our engineers and what have you to be out there talking to the tenants and developing relationships. But it is the one thing, and it's what's great about our industry, right? You control that, right? That's not, there's no adversity that can happen in that sense that can stop you from making 75, right? And if you know that your competitors are making 25 or 50 or they're making zero, I'm probably going to beat you.
Yeah. I like the language that you just said. I'm probably going to beat you. Are you a competitive person?
Yeah. But our industry is competitive. Now that's we started something, you know, we live in a world, we've built a regional company, but we live in a world where there's these big global companies like, you know, CB and Jones Lang or what have you. And so, yeah, there's a little bit of a chip on our shoulder. We love going in and building a thing right in front of them. And, you know, we recruit a lot of people from those global platforms because they see a better culture or they see a better opportunity, and we do things a little bit differently. We're competitive. It can be unhealthy though, right? I mean, we talk about that a lot, that you want healthy competition, right? And that to me is you enjoy playing the game, you really gave your best, and if you lost, you lost, but you knew you really tried, you really left it on the field, you really did the best that you could possibly have done, and then you learn from it, right? And you say, okay, well, we lost that game, we really did give our best, let's kind of break down the film and understand what we can do better next time, and then let's have fun with it. But yeah. I mean, competition should be fun. When competition becomes your self-worth, when competition and wins and losses become how you feel about, that's when it becomes, how you feel about yourself, that's when it becomes unhealthy.
Sure.
Competition should be fun. You should enjoy the game. It's you know, the phrase I use, you know, I've used with my son and probably used it here, is that there are people in golf, right, that enjoy and get excited about having a birdie putt, right? They look at it, they go, this is an opportunity, I'm so excited, let's do our best. There are people that look at the birdie putt and they're worried about missing it, right? I might miss it, I don't want to miss it, right? You know, which one's going to do better, right? That's kind of the attitude. So I want to enjoy having a chance at a birdie. I want to be smiling. I want to have fun with that. And if I don't make it, okay, I gave it my best.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like standing over that putt and thinking about missing it.
Sure. It's like you're competing with yourself. You know what you're capable of, right?
Yeah, a little bit, right? I mean, it's you know, a lot of the game is played between your ears, right? We have a great speaker, Trevor Moad, that comes in out from the outside. He's fantastic, and he works with a lot of the collegiate football programs, and they talk a lot about eliminating, what they do is they eliminate negative thinking. And, you know, the studies, there's not a lot of studies that will prove that positive thinking works, but there are a ton of studies that will show you that negative thinking, you know, works 100% of the time negatively. So if you can get yourself to kind of neutral, right, and eliminate those negative thoughts, because there's a lot of them in our head. We all have them. I mean, we all have them. There's a lot of stuff in your head that you're kind of beating yourself up about, or you know, thinking about your self-worth in your head, and those negative words they're damaging. And so, if you can just focus on eliminating that, you're probably going to be better off.
Yeah. See, that's beautiful. I really like, you know, focusing on eliminating negative thinking and actually enjoying the game.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the game of commercial real estate, right? You have 320 employees. You have this great culture here. Everybody was super friendly. They made me a light cocoa coffee. Just friendly, right?
Did we charge you for that? Or
yeah,
no?
It was $6.
Yeah,
bucks.
Yeah, good. It was good.
It was more expensive than Starbucks.
The more we got to work on our margins.
Yeah. But no, great culture here. Like, talk to me about the game of commercial real estate and the culture that you built here.
So our game is we are at our heart a real estate services company, right? So we have third party brokerage and property management and leasing and tenant rep and investment sales. We are built a company that's focused around serving clients, serving other people, right? And we're not perfect by any means, but we really want to have a culture that is focused on serving other people, right? And we really want to have a culture that is personal, right? You know, one of the things we realized is that, in fact, one of our partners gave, we were talking about the company and we were talking about the culture, and he used this example that like stopped the meeting, you know, and he said, there's, you know, a 16-year-old that wakes up on his or her 16-year-old birthday and they get a brand new car for their birthday. I had to go out and mow 1,500 lawns to save up $3,500 to buy a used car. I appreciated my car more than that 16, you know, than my buddy that got a car on his birthday. And that's kind of what we want, you know, that was a pretty good description of what we wanted to have at Foundry, that it was very personal to us, that we stepped away and built something starting from scratch. This business is very, very personal to us, right? And so our success, our client success, our employees' success, those things are very, very personal to us, right? You know, I've given a talk about if somebody says it's just business, that's probably somebody you should watch out for, right? Because it's personal. It is personal. And that's the kind of culture that we want to have. And that means how you interact with other people. That means how you treat other people. All of those things are a personal thing. And so that kind of concept of it's personal and it's about relationships is really at the core of our culture, kind of what we build. I'm not sure I answered the question totally. I may have gone a little bit winding.
Could you restart and just share? No, I'm just messing with
you. Yeah.
So how did you guys start going from working for another brokerage?
Yeah.
How did you guys start Foundry Commercial? Like, talk us about like the day you go, I'm going to start my own.
Yeah.
What did your wife say? Yeah. How'd you start it?
Yeah.
I just dropped my pen. Let me pick this thing up.
So, you know, we were talking about this earlier. This wasn't our grand plan to start a company, right? I mean, you know, it's a theme that we've talked about in our platform, that the worst thing that can happen to you is often the best thing, right? And so we were working at Trammell Crow Company. I'd worked there for 15 years. I was running our North Florida business. It was a great business. We had done really well. We had a blast. We had a great culture. Crow was a great name. And woke up one day and Trammell Crow was selling to CBRE. You know, two big behemoths were going to merge. That was, you know, it was in the public environment, in the public market space, and I was a partner in the company, so totally understood why it happened. It had to happen. I mean, the premium at that time, this is 2006, right? So the markets were screaming. It had to happen. I mean, so I totally understood that. But I knew, and several of my partners that I had worked with for a very long time, 10 to 15 years, that felt like the worst thing. Like the thing that we loved and we had worked so hard to build, we knew it was going to go away. Not taking anything away from CB, but it was going to be their company. It was going to be their culture and what have you. And we had a different culture and a different way of approaching the business. And that was going to end. Right. I mean, that was going to end. It was, you know, there was a mourning period and it was just going to stop. Right. And so we were taking a season to kind of figure out what we were going to do next. We had opportunities to stay. Other companies were starting to recruit us. Crow typically had been a place where it was really difficult to recruit out of. And one of our partners, you know, and this company, you know, it's not about me. I mean, I have a fantastic group of partners that have really built this company. And we were literally leaving kind of a goodbye celebration that we had because we knew the thing was going to end. And he called me and said, I don't know that this thing needs to end. I don't know that we need to. We've worked so long together. We trust each other. You know, our space can have a little bit of a mercenary feel. We don't have that feel. Maybe there's a way to keep this together, you know, a core group together. And I said, okay, great. How do we do that? And he goes, that's your job. You got to go figure it out. But I'd be in if we could figure that out. And so we set about figuring it out. So it went quickly, pretty quickly, from a morning, this thing's gonna change. I'm probably gonna leave. To okay, maybe we can do our own thing. Maybe we can go start our own company. And you know, over the course of, you know, a handful of months, we ended up partnering with CNL, which is a great Orlando company, in a joint venture to start a commercial real estate company in 2007.
That's a great year to start a real estate business, 2007. You know, the market's just about to go through one of its biggest
crashes ever.
Yeah. Okay, biggest crashes ever.
Yeah. You know, it actually is, right? And so going back to, you know, the theme, right? You know, the worst thing is the best thing. We started the company in 2007 with 12 people, basically. We had some folks here in Orlando, and we had some folks in Tampa, and we had some folks in Jacksonville. And 18 months later, the world blew up, right? The train ran off the tracks, a collapse of epic proportions. But we hadn't spent any money. I mean, we were still kind of building the company. We didn't make any investments. We didn't really... Trust me, if we had had the capital at that point, we probably would have spent it. But we didn't have access to the capital yet. We were still building the company and building the track record. So we were, and we were partnered with CNL, and Jim Seneff, the founder, is very much a contrarian individual. And so that crash was probably the best thing that ever happened to us, because now all of a sudden there was all this disruption in the space, right? So contrast to 2006... Everybody's doing great. Why would I ever leave? The world is perfect. It's never going to stop, right? 2007, people are losing jobs. Companies are going out of business. Assets are going back to lenders. There's massive disruption in the space. And it became an opportunity for us to grow the company, you know. And so from 2007 to ultimately 2013, 2014, when some shifts happened in our business, we had massive growth. You know, and I used to tell the story. It was... You know, at some point I felt guilty about it. We would go to holiday parties, right, and Christmas parties all around the city, and industry parties and what have you. And there was a lot of lamenting going on, right? You know, I lost my job, or I'm doing workouts on our company or on assets. And it was just kind of a miserable 2 to 3 years. And you go to these parties and then ask, well, how are you guys doing? And we were like, it's going great. I mean, we're having a blast. We're building a company. We're having fun. We're not making a lot of money, but that's okay. We're having a real blast during the season. So it was a real odd contrast,
yeah,
during that because a lot of our friends were hurting during that season. You know, a lot of that, our industry in particular, got crushed.
Yeah.
But we ended up building a thing that, and if you're in commercial real estate, right, you inherently, if you're successful, you have kind of a builder mentality, right? You get to build buildings, you get to build teams, you get to build companies, you get to build platforms, you get to build all these things. And inherently, the people that are really good in commercial real estate, they love to build things. And that's what we were doing. We were just doing it during the greatest financial recession of our lifetime.
Wow. So a group of friends, really, and, mm-hmm, and partners, mm-hmm, got together and said, let's build this. Let's keep this thing alive. Because what you guys created was a tight group of people, great culture, So you decided to keep it going. Mm-hmm. And then through one of the hardest times ever financially in America, maybe history, you guys were growing and building a great business. So fast forward, 2019, you've built a team. Like, brag about your team. Brag about the culture that you created. Talk to us about some of the things that are really important to you here.
So the thing that I'm trying to think of the right kind of, you know, metaphor. What I would tell you is that the folks that are partners in our company, the folks that are leaders in our company, what I'm probably the most proud of is that they are probably some of the most recruited and desirable people in our industry. I mean, they're very well known. They're very, very good at what they're doing. And they love to be here, right? And that is a big part of what we've continued to try to create, right? I mean, it's happened more than once, and not just in Orlando, but in Charlotte and Raleigh and other areas of the country. We're primarily focused on the Southeast. You know, a partner will join us, a producer will join us, they'll leave a big platform, and people will look at that and go, man, why are they going to Foundry, you know, or man, they're going to Foundry. I need to understand what's going on there because something special happens. I mean, I can give you a list of names that won't necessarily mean anything to your listeners, but in our space, they're uber well-known. They've got great, successful track records, or they are some of the brightest young people in our industry, and they look at Foundry and they go, I know I can go over there and I can build something, right? I can be a part of building something, as opposed to going to a big global platform where they're going to tell me what to do, right? We're very much, you know, look, if you can come in and you can create value and you can build something, it doesn't matter how old you are, it doesn't matter how much experience you are, we'll listen to you. We'll help you get there. We'll help you figure it out, and you're going to share in that value, right? And that's unique. If you look at the other platforms, it's generally, hey, they're recruiting great people, but here's what you're going to do. That's not our belief. We love commercial real estate. It is, you know, one of the greatest entrepreneurial businesses on the planet, in our opinion. There's no ceiling, you know, in terms of what you can do and what you can earn and what you can create. And that's the kind of culture that we're trying to build to attract people. And that's the kind of culture that we've built that has attracted some of the most talented people in the Southeast. And that's fun, right? I mean, that's kind of what you're trying to do. And we've just seen it over and over again.
Yeah. You mentioned a producer, like this person who has this idea of building to create value, sharing in the value. And you use the term producer.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean to Foundry? What does a producer to Foundry mean?
Well, I think everybody's a producer in some sense, right? Yeah. It's just, what are you producing? A big chunk of our business is on the brokerage side, right? So we have commercial real estate brokers. They are doing, you know, they are either leasing office buildings or industrial buildings or retail centers. They are helping tenants find space, and they're representing the tenants. So we represent the buildings and we represent the tenants. And then we have investment brokers that are out there helping. We have a big, you know, we have a very big business in the faith-based and nonprofit space, where we're helping denominations and churches and faith-based lenders with their asset base and helping them not only asset manage, but helping them dispose of assets and sell those assets. We have a big business that's in just construction management. So we do third-party construction management. Those folks have to go out there and find the client and then execute the business. So everybody's really in production. You know, we have a big accounting business. I mean, they are producing reports for owners, and what they produce is actually really, really important, right? The quality of those reports, the accuracy of those reports are really, really important. So, I mean, at the end of the day, everybody's producing something. You know, in our space, the brokers tend to get more of the spotlight, and they work on the big deals and what have you. But engineers are producers, accountants are producers. You know, everybody, you know, Keanu, who you met when we walked in, I mean,
she's, you know, the one who sold me the coffee.
She sold you the coffee. So yeah. There, we've got a big coffee business going. Yeah. So.
Yeah. What? So let's just say we're having a conversation, and you know, you're interviewing someone to become a producer. Like, what questions are you going to ask to see if someone's a producer or not?
They don't allow me to do that anymore.
Are you not a good hire?
No. I'm probably a lot more old school in some of my, how I was brought up. I mean, but that those interviews should be a little bit challenging, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so it should be a little bit testing, we want to see not just how they perform in the interview, but I would tell you it's probably more important on the follow-up. And that's something that I think has been lost over the last few seasons, right? I can tell you, I've watched it happen, I'm watching it happen right now, that you can lose an opportunity in any situation in an interview, right? How you perform in an interview. But for the most part, if people are themselves, they're going to be fine, right? If they're trying to put on a show or they're trying to be somebody they're not, that kind of gets illuminated during an interview. You can smell it, right?
Yeah.
And we're looking for people, when I was allowed to interview, I would often say, look, I don't have questions. I just want to get to know you. I want to know who you are. I want to know about you. I want to know your heart. I want to know those types of things. You can lose it in the interview, but I can tell you where you win it at Foundry is in the follow-up. Right. And I've seen it happen. We have these interviews and, you've got a group of people and they're all kind of 50-50. I like that person or I'm not sure I like that person or what have you. But then you wait and you see what the follow-up is. Right. And if there's no follow-up, then a 50-50 person's not going to get in. But then when you start to see handwritten notes or they found out something personal about you and sent you a book. We talked about this and, here's this gift. It's meaningful and it's creative and they thought. And so now you're looking at them and they're going, okay, they're paying attention. They're being creative. They're being thoughtful. It's that follow-up that I think wins it most of the time. And I see it talking about it. I watch it right now, the person we're interviewing. The team is kind of split to neutral. But then that individual started sending these great follow-up items, right?
Nice.
And they were far, by the way, that impression was far better than they actually did in the interview, right? During the interview, they were kind of a low energy, a little bit, that was kind of the question, are they really going to do well? And the follow-up is what kind of turned the corner because they were going, okay, that may just be a personality style. He or she is clearly thinking and they're creative and they're persistent.
And how they treat you trying to get a job, that's how they're going to treat your clients.
That's your marketing, right? I mean, that's not necessarily how they're going to treat the clients. That is part of it, but it's how do they deal with a no? How do they deal with adversity? How do they deal with a pause in the deal, right? Do they keep going or do they go, well, they didn't call me back. They must not want me, right? Because our business too, man, if you don't like hearing no, then you really shouldn't be in, our business, right?
Yeah.
Because you hear no constantly.
Yeah, right? I'm married. I hear no all the time.
I'll hear it here in about an hour and a half,
So this thing of professionally persistent, that keeps kind of like rearing up during our conversation.
Yeah.
How do you see that thing that you're trying to share with the world, professionally persistent, how are you passing that on to your kids, or where would you like to see that really installed in your kids?
Really the best way that I know how to share with my kids on kind of lessons learned and what have you is to really just be honest and transparent about my life and not if you're a parent, and particularly I have a 21 and a 22, about to be a 23-year-old. So they've heard all the lectures, right? They've heard all the speeches. And you're going to get accused of that as being a parent. But when I tell them the story about, how I made a huge mistake or how here's the lesson I learned because of this horrible thing that happened, right? that's when it usually gets through. And, you know, I've told them the story about how I got my first job with Trammell Crow Company, that it was not some wonderful interview that, you know, I woke up the next day and I had a job offer. It took me 4.5 months of calling them and stalking them and figuring out what events they were going to. And I was always there. I was always right in front of them. And it wasn't rude and it wasn't overly aggressive. And sometimes it was awkward because I kept coming at them. But that really is what got that job for me. That was, I mean, one of the best things that ever happened to me in my career. It's how I learned about the industry. It's where my mentor came from, who became one of my closest friends. And but if I had given up during that 4.5 month period, if I had stopped calling, I wouldn't have gotten the gig.
Sure. You mentioned during your interview process, you said that you just want to know someone's heart.
Yeah.
And as we were talking, you mentioned things like you guys work with faith-based organizations, nonprofits, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. reading through your bio and some of your background, you're on the board for Coalition for the Homeless,
mm-hmm.
and you do a lot of work in missions. Like, you were actually overseas somewhere
recently. In the Dominican Republic, yeah.
So, like, what does it matter about someone's heart? Like, what does that have to do with commercial real estate or business? You said, like, you kind of want to check people's hearts. And your heart is in, you know, faith-based organizations,
sure.
nonprofits, missions, homeless. Like, what does the heart even matter when it comes to a commercial deal?
How you treat people is everything, right? I mean, and how you treat people is often a product of what you've gone through in your life, right? And so getting to know somebody's heart is going to help me, you know, understand that, because, you know, we have some core principles at Foundry, and one of those is we want to treat people the way we want to be treated, right? You need the golden rule. Knowing somebody's heart, knowing maybe some of the adversity that they've gone through, because everybody's got I just want to know that they have the strength to be vulnerable and the strength to be honest about what they've gone through, as opposed to somebody who, you know, is kind of perfect and what have you, because that's a lie, right? That's a mask. And you know, when you ask, you know, what's your biggest flaw or something like that, and somebody goes, well, sometimes I work too hard. You know, that's not, you know, we laugh. I mean, because that one's probably not going to make the cut. But I just, you know, you want to know somebody's heart. You want to know that they care about what they're doing, because, you know, we serve customers, right? And if you don't have a, you know, kind of a servant mentality, if you don't dig that part of the business, right? I don't think you're going to do very well. And look, we've all had seasons in our lives where we were better at that than, you know, we are today. And a lot of the folks that have joined us, you know, are folks that we've had relationships. A lot of folks work for Trammell Crow or other commercial real estate, and we knew them 10, 15, 20 years ago. And you look at them now and you look at the lessons that they've learned, and you hear their heart and you hear how they've changed. That's really neat. But yeah, I mean, look, a lot of us in the business are believers, and a lot of us in the industry are believers. We're not, you know, we're not a Christian company. You know, that's not, you know, that's not something we wanted to kind of label ourselves as. But a lot of us are believers, and that, and at the heart of our belief is service, right? I mean, we want to go and serve people. We want to try to make the world a better place. The one of the other principles in our business is we want to impact the communities that we live in, and we want to serve those communities, and that's a big part of kind of who we are, right? Not everybody believes that, right? Not everybody believes that. They look at it and they say, okay, well, I'm going to do as well as I can in business, and the ends justify the means, and then I'm going to take that and do good with it. We look at it as, no, it starts today, right? We want to do good in the world today, and we want to be competitive in our business today. We want to be excellent at the things that we do, but one of those things are that we want to serve the communities that we're in, and we're fortunate we get to serve communities all over the Southeast.
Yeah. Paul, what's the next thing that you're working on? Like, as an entrepreneur, we're always building. This is a part of the culture. Like, in your brain, what's the thing that's inspiring you, keeping you going? Because you built a successful business.
We built it. Yeah, I've partnered
your team.
Yeah, we've built something that we've ended up building something that's far beyond kind of what we originally thought.
So you and your partners, your friends, these people that you've got together, what's on your all's brains of the next thing, or where do you want to see this thing built?
You know, it's a great question. Some of the things I can't talk about specifically, which is fine, but I tell you, the thing that excites me the most is that when you're growing a business from scratch, and you know this, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners know this, you have these long seasons where everybody's wearing every hat, right? I mean, and everybody's kind of running around, and there's not as much focus as you would like because everybody's got to do everything. And I think what excites us now today is that we've got infrastructure, we've got people in place, we have fantastic leaders that are doing a great job, and myself and a couple of key partners are really getting to a point where we can start thinking 2 and 3 years out. Whereas before, we couldn't. It was this year. It was what's in front of us.
This week.
Either this week, this day. What do we need to go kill? You know, that kind of thing. We're getting to a point where some of the key folks in the business, we can kind of step back and say, okay, what are the 2 and 3 year things that we can start getting out ahead? That's, you know, as I'm a high process person. I tend to break everything down kind of linear and understand the logic. Logic has, you know, has always been kind of a big part of my life. When we can start thinking that way 2 and 3 years out, that gets us pretty excited. Because, you know, look, I think we're at a point, you know, as I've said, you know, pretty consistently to our partners and our associates, that the big global platforms are not a threat to us. They are not what is going to take us down. What will take us down is us, right? We're the enemy. You know, when greed and behavior and all of those things, if those are the things that will take us down, not external sources at this point. And so to be able to kind of think about that and get strategic about it, that to me is pretty exciting.
That's awesome. What question should I have asked you during this interview that I totally just missed the point that I didn't ask you?
Oh, man, I don't know. That's one I haven't really thought about. You know, I think from an advice standpoint, right? I mean, I mentioned it earlier. You know, what's the best advice you can give somebody that's kind of out there trying to start a company or in their career or what have you? And that is that the worst thing is often the best thing. The worst things often, how you respond in those moments, really what I've learned in my life is really what defines you, right? The worst things and those events in your life, both on the business standpoint, your personal life, those are the things that actually define your character. Those are the things that highlight your flaws, right? They point them out to you. They scream at you. We have a set of, you know, principles in our company that we've started to roll out, and immediately several of them were tested. And you know, what was evident to me was that we actually got them right, because you can put a bunch of great words on the wall, but if they're not tested, then they don't mean anything, right? If you just put the great words up on the wall and the world's working fine and the company's working fine and what have you, and everybody looks at them and goes, those are really, really nice. But when you put those things up on the wall and something happens, a bad thing happens, and you go and you look at those things and you say, okay, well, that's going to define our behavior. So we're actually going to live by that.
Give us an example of something that, you know, corporations or companies put up on the wall and, oh, it's beautiful, But for you guys, you put it up on the wall and it was tested. Are you allowed to share something?
So, you know, some of it I can't, you know, which is okay. I mean, right? I mean, it was a thing happened and we looked at it and we said, that doesn't match.
Yeah.
Right? We were talking about it with another group actually just yesterday and we were talking about culture, right? And I said, you know, the thing that we've learned over this time, you know, culture is not ping pong tables and free lunches and nap rooms and all that other stuff, right? Those are perks. Culture is how you treat people, but more importantly, how do you respond when there's mistreatment? How do you respond when something violates that culture? That's actually what defines culture. And if your culture is one that ignores those things, then you've got inherently a bad culture, right? If you've got one that sees a thing and says, okay, well, that's not the way we want to behave, that doesn't live up to kind of what we said we want it to be, we're going to have to go deal with that. Those are hard moments. Those are the moments where I actually spend my time, right? I mean, because I can't leave that up to somebody else. I have to go into the difficult situations sometimes and make hard choices. But I think we're doing it in a way that everybody looks at that and says, yeah, that response matches up with who we said we are. But it's how you treat people and how you respond to mistreatment is what defines your culture.
That's a pretty good answer.
Okay.
I like that. Let's go with that.
All right. I mean, I should have written it down.
Yeah. Well, I'll record it.
Okay. There you go.
Sounds good, right? So for people out there who are listening, potential partners, potential producers, potential employees, like if people want to learn more about you and Foundry Commercial, where could they go to find out this information?
Well, they could certainly go to the website. And I actually think, you know, while we're always trying to work to tweak it, if you go into our story room, that will give you a pretty good sense of who we are. There's certainly a lot of articles, so that'll give you – there's a lot of articles and press around kind of the deals that we're working on and some of the bigger events in the company. We also have on there our blogs, though, that we've published on LinkedIn. We also have a lot of videos about, we just put one out that I think is awesome on our summit where we had, you know, about 120 associates together, and we put that video together that just kind of captures our culture. If you want to learn about who we are, I think looking at the website but then going to the story room will kind of tell you a little bit more about who we are and give you a feel for it. We try to be very transparent. I mean, it's you know, we try to have some contrast in our space. You know, one of the things that we realized as we started the company is that every single commercial real estate firm on the planet says the exact same thing about themselves, right? They're all leading commercial real estate companies that have an owner's mentality. They all say it, right? They all say the same things. And we said, you know, that was kind of boring to us. That we really wanted to be a culture that was pretty transparent. And so when you look at the stuff that we publish, we try to be really transparent about it. And sometimes that means it's really messy because humans are messy. And but ultimately, I hope you'll see our heart in those stories and kind of the stuff we produced.
Awesome. And we'll include the links to your LinkedIn sites, your website. We'll include that all in the show notes. So
great.
For people listening in, they could go to the show notes, click that, and go straight to your site.
Okay.
All right. So sound good. And they could come visit for a $6 coffee.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll knock it down for them.
For them. Yeah. Everybody but me, right? Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much. Paul, this has been a really fun conversation. I really appreciate you coming, sharing your passion, your joy. Given that the theme of professionally persistent, I think that's really important for entrepreneurs to hear out there is get past the no, get past the 75 no's to get to the next yes.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that with us.
Happy to do it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen listening into this podcast interview, we're downtown Orlando right now having a conversation with an Orlando-based leader. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you guys have a wonderful day. Please continue to build here in Orlando. Buy businesses here. Sell businesses here. Orlando is a great place, and we love being a part of it. Hope you guys have a wonderful day, and we will talk with you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.